listening to Radio Arian at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to Arian Insights. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the program today Alex Davies from National Action. Now, I've wanted to get Alex on here to interview him for quite a while now. National Action, probably the most exciting nationalist group that we actually have in Britain. They've caused quite some waves over here as well as over the other side of the pond. I know that the American listeners to the show are really interested in National Action, and they really are just making a lot of waves at the moment and getting a lot of support all over the place. So welcome to the program, Alex. How are you doing today?
Hello, Sven. Thank you for having me. I'm very well, thank you.
Well, that's good to hear. I hear you recently gave a speech at the London Forum just 2 days ago. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I did give a talk at the London Forum. I think there was five other speakers on the bill. Myself, Peter Fromm, Michael Walker, who used to edit Scorpion magazine, James Mack from the World Church of the Creator, and there was one other speaker whose name escapes me. a very good meeting, very successful meeting, well organised by Jez Turner.
Yeah, he does. He does a lot of good, I think. Jez does. I think you had him speaking at your conference last year, which was something that I wanted to go into. Was a conference, because I think that was a big success for the group to actually put a conference on. But what was the particular subject matter of the speech that you gave? I'm sure people are going to find it on YouTube eventually. But can you give us a brief idea of what the subject matter was that you talked about?
Yeah, well, my subject matter was on the subject of motivation and how we basically get people who are involved in the movement to stay involved, and kind of broaching some of the topics that have really kind of kept the movement down. So things, for instance, like, you know, petty rivalries, that type of thing, and kind of just imploring people to kind of get serious and put the cause first, second and last, you know, rather than their own kind of agendas, vested interests, that type of thing.
Well, we've all got to support each other. I mean, one of the things that I really liked about National Action was the way that you worked with the British movement and people from Misanthropic Division and these other groups that we have that sort of came together to do demonstrations with you last year or the year before. And I believe you had people, someone from the British movement to speak to you at one point. So I think it's good to see that National Action have worked with other groups right from the beginning. Did you have anyone else with you at this Newcastle demonstration that you recently did?
No, in Newcastle we were kind of on our own. It was a standalone protest that we organised. But obviously we're all for National Socialist Unity. We do make kind of gestures to other organisations, and we do have a good working relationship with several other National Socialist groups, so, you know, British Movement, Misanthropic Division, and groups that basically share the same worldview as us. You know, we work alongside those organisations, and we have a very good working relationship with them. But right. Newcastle itself, though, was just us. You know, it was just something that we organised.
Well, that was really impressive. I thought that really showed you what can be done when you don't actually tell the authorities about it, and the Antifa don't get a chance to bus loads of people in to scream over the top of you. I mean, you had one insane woman screaming there, and she soon shut up. And at the end of it, you got a massive cheer from the people because they actually got a chance to hear you.
Very, very successful demonstration, definitely. Yeah. And the whole point of obviously the flash demos is that there isn't any kind of barrier between you and the general public. If you go to a sort of standard static demonstration, you have yourselves, in one kettle, and you're surrounded by all these police officers. And sometimes, if you're in a city centre, they'll even put up like metal barriers. So if you go to like a demonstration in like London or in Manchester or Birmingham, you'll find that the police have a tendency to erect massive steel fences to cage you in. So you're literally, you're literally in a cage like an animal, you know. And you're surrounded by police officers, and then you're surrounded by even more counter demonstrators. Because you know, you have a massive problem like we had in Liverpool, where if you give the opposition a chance to mobilise, they have the resources to bus people in from all over the country. We know that people from as far north as Edinburgh and Aberdeen, and from as far south as Weymouth and Plymouth, came to Liverpool to counter our mobilisation there. So we are. With the flash demonstrations, a massive advantage in that respect, because they can't mobilise. They don't have for all their talk of being community activists and defending the multicultural communities against fascist outsiders. The anti-fascists have don't really have that much of a community presence in places like Newcastle, and where we've also done flash demos in Liverpool, Coventry, we've done events in London, and various other places. And what you find is that if you don't give them 3 months advance notice, they're not very quick on their toes. In Liverpool is probably the best example of this, because Liverpool is known as this big, notorious red city, where, they said, after the white man march in Liverpool, they said that if you set foot in this city again, you'll be driven off, and not, not on trains this time, but in body bags, But, we did a demonstration there before Christmas, and we marched from one end of the city centre to the other, which took us like, 20 minutes, and we stopped several times on the way to give speeches and all the rest of it. They were nowhere to be seen. So, the flash demonstrations are really, really effective, and the Reds hate them. They absolutely loathe them, because they don't have the chance to mobilize and bring in any kind of superior numbers, And it's a very good kind of tactical innovation that we've brought to the scene.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only answer that the left have actually got for nationalism is to shout over the top of us, to shout over the top of you, because they've got no arguments against what you're saying, and they know that what you are saying is going to appeal to the public, as it did at Newcastle, and they can't argue with that. That's why they come out with this no platform idea, and we mustn't let the nationalists say anything, we mustn't let the fascists say anything, and the reason for that is because you're speaking the truth. So when you get the chance to actually speak to the public, they know that the public are going to come to our side, as you saw yourself in Newcastle and when you walked through Liverpool. And I think that also proves there really aren't that many of them. If you can walk through the town, which they supposedly say Liverpool is ours, it's communist place, if you can walk through there and give speeches and you get a good result from the people, that just shows you that it's a pack of lies, that the place is communist and it's run by them. That Newcastle demonstration, it's only an early one this year, but it's one of the best that I've seen for a long time. And you look good as well. You've got, you're getting away with this not wearing a uniform, but still wearing a sort of uniform. Because here in Britain, we have law against that, don't we? And you can see the evolution of the group in the way that you look. You now look far more disciplined and orderly than you did at first with the demonstration that you did with the Mandela statue. And so you've got more of these flash demonstrations planned for the year ahead, have you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's an organic process, really. I mean, when we started off, we were literally like we're amateurs, none of us had much previous experience in other political organizations. We didn't have a tremendous amount of experience when it came to organizing events and that sort of thing. So when we started off, we were literally starting from scratch, and we didn't have a clue what we were doing, really. So as things have developed, we've become much more familiar with organizing events, and we've become able to impose standards, and this is something that we've kind of always set out to do, and we've aimed to do this and we've done it. As you, you know, as you can see, if somebody compares a photograph of what we were doing in, of how we appeared in South Africa, at the South Africa demonstration, or the demonstration provided in Coventry, the look is a bit kind of disjointed. You know, some people are wearing kind of smart attire, other people are wearing casual stuff, other people are wearing kind of different styles, different colours, and it's kind of just a mishmash, and kind of people have just turned up in whatever they've decided to turn up in on the day. There's no kind of uniformity at all. Whereas Newcastle, a standard was imposed, people were told what to wear, and they conformed to that dress code. And it's something that's entirely legal. You can do it. The ban on political uniforms is when you stick insignia on stick patches and that sort of thing on your sleeve, start wearing armbands, that type of thing. That's when you kind of get into a bit of risky territory there legally. But you know, there's nothing illegal in telling everyone to dress up in a black hoodie or something. You know, wear a black hoodie. You know, from H&M or whatever, there's nothing illegal in doing that. But it's been an organic process, and it's been something that, it takes time to do. I think some people kind of, and I get this a lot, like, especially when we first started out, people just assume that you can kind of get something and you can just build it and they will come, and you can just impose something from the top down instantly. Whereas that's kind of a bit unrealistic. Especially when you haven't got a ready-made group of people. When we started, there wasn't a nationalist culture in Britain. There wasn't a nationalist youth culture. So there wasn't any nationalist youth to draw from. It was a very kind of narrow group of people, a very small group of people. So without that, we couldn't really, as we were bringing in new people, we've kind of had to kind of acclimatize them to how we operate, get them used to how we operate and how we do things. Now that we've got a brand image, now that people kind of, when they approach us, they kind of know what we're like and how we operate, they know what to expect. And so it's a lot easier to do that now, but it's been a process. And we've had a bit of a hard time from some quarters, because they've always said you can't even get people to do this, you can't get people to do that. But, it's something that you have to work on. And that's been kind of the distinction between maybe our group and past initiatives in the past that didn't work out, because they kind of thought that they could do things instantly. Things would come much more easily than they did. And they didn't realize that it is a bit of a struggle sometimes to get everyone, to herd all the cats together, and get them to kind of follow the line,
Yeah, I'm thinking of the BNP and their BNP youth that sort of kind of fizzled out. And if you've got a group that imposes it from the top down, that's got all these resources, well, maybe they can do it. But you've managed to do this with hardly any resources at all, and starting from a small group. One of the things that really impressed me was that in one of your manifestos, you said that your media stunts would get more and more daring, and you would gradually get more and more publicity, and you succeeded in doing this with the media stunts that you've done, with the bananas on the statue and the flags around the park, and it's gradually got you a kind of notoriety, which is a good thing. I mean, would you agree that no, all publicity is good publicity? There's no such thing as bad publicity?
In many respects, yes. The good thing about how we've developed ourselves is that because we've developed the reputation, from that reputation has developed an authority. We now can speak with some authority over other people. And so, whereas before we were literally, people would say, well, what right have you got to tell me what to do? Well, you can't say this to me. You can't, order me about. Now people are a bit more willing to listen to us because they've realized that we actually have a point and we know what we're talking about. Which really wasn't the case in the past. One of the reasons why we had to kind of strike out as a nationalist youth group on our own and separated from the other political organizations was because nobody would listen to us, because we were just young kids who didn't know what they were talking about. But we've kind of proven a lot of people wrong, a lot of skeptics wrong. When it comes to publicity, I think we've chosen a strategy where the media will either go two ways. They'll either try and ridicule you, and they've done that a lot in the past, where they've kind of presented nationalists as being losers, as being people of low social status. You become a nationalist and you'll never get a girlfriend, that type of thing. You know, all nationalists are losers. They drink and have bad hygiene, you know, that sort of thing, bad dress sense. Whereas what we've kind of done is we've kind of almost cajoled the media and baited them into kind of getting so angry and getting so shocked at what we produce. You know, they don't write articles on, oh, these National Action guys, they're a bunch of losers. They say, oh, these National Action guys, they're a bunch of white jihadis, they're a bunch of terrorists, you know? And it's completely ridiculous, you know? And so if you can get the media to do that, it's very rewarding, because it builds up a reputation that you can utilize.
Yeah, especially if you start off with only a limited number of members, the more publicity you get, and the more imposing that you seem, the better it is. And the videos that you've been producing, they've been really pioneering as well, because they're really slick. You know, they're really impressive, as the sort of thing that you'd expect to see on BBC Two when they're trying to make a youth film up or something. They're very fast cut, very up to date music, just inspiring videos to see. I can imagine young people that are angry at what's been done to them, angry at the system, angry at their people being replaced and being attacked by these savages that are coming from abroad. They see a video like that, like that Newcastle one, and they're like, yes, that's what I want to do. That's where I want to be. They're who I want to be with. I can see that's really appealing to young people.
The Newcastle video is really, really good. I think it was one of the best ones that we ever did. Not because technically it was quite simple. You know, it wasn't majorly innovative. You look at something like the video we did for Warwick. So we went around Warwick University and Coventry doing, you know, getting up to various bits of mischief, and the video that we did for Liverpool. Those were very long videos, 15-minute videos. They had all these different stills, all these different scenes, making use of all these different effects and that sort of thing. They were very complicated and long videos to put together. Warwick video was done almost like a Vice documentary. The Liverpool video was almost like an art house film, you know, very creative, very avant-garde. Whereas the Newcastle video was almost like, it was just so simple, because the content was there. You know, all you had to do was edit the video footage, you know, and put it together into a narrative. So, you know, you see, at the beginning, there's like two girls, and one of them, turns to her friend and goes, you know, why are we so interested in this? And she goes, because it's awesome, you know. And that's like, you know, if anyone watching that, that's a bit brilliant, you know, isn't it? It's like, it shows that nationalism, like national socialism, is popular. It shows that people actually think it's really cool and really exciting, you know, which it is. But it's something that isn't often conveyed in the propaganda that we put out. Another bit is where, you know, where the speaker goes, you know, we're National Action and we fight for Adolf Hitler, you know, and he gives a Roman salute. He's, you know, members of the crowd, young people in the crowd, you know, give back the salute, you know, respond to the salute. And that just shows, you know, that it's not just something, that we're not just, you know, this small bunch of, you know, a minority group. You know, that there are people, you know, among the general population, among normal, you know, teenagers, who actually follow what we say, who actually stand for exactly the same things that we stand for, that we're not just, you know, the people who are National Socialists in Britain aren't just this small group of, you know, 50, 60 young men and women, but there are other people out there who share our beliefs who might not be as open about it. But, you know, that's soon changing. The more things we do, the more demonstrations we do, the more propaganda we put out, the more videos we put out, the more open this segment of society is going to become. You know, the people who are, you know, watching videos like, you know, The Great Story Never Told. How many hits has that had, you know? Do you know, like
millions? Millions.
Yeah. You know,
Well, over a million.
Millions and millions. There was that other thing, that other video,
Hailstorm?
Kind of the refugee crisis, you know, that video that was put out.
Yeah, I know. I forget the name of it, but I know the one you mean.
We've all seen it. And that's had millions of views as well. So we know that, you know, sat behind computer screens, people, a large number of people looking at it, and they're primarily young people between the ages of kind of, you know, 14, 15, 16 to about 25, 30. Very kind of narrow demographic. It's not pensioners looking at this stuff, you know what I mean? The sort of people who would go vote UKIP, you know, your sort of man over the age of 40 who's in a kind of low-skilled job. You know, it's your kind of young people who are in college, university, in your kind of junior professions, and who are going to be the future middle class and the future leadership caucus of the nation. You know, so it's very, very interesting to see. And, you know, sooner or later, I think, you know, sooner, we're going to see this start to show. Just like in France, you know, a few years back when they brought in gay marriage, nobody thought that there'd be riots in the streets of France, you know. And there was. There was a mass reaction from the people in France. It wasn't, you know, Catholic priests and kind of these you know, socially conservative OAPs. It was young people in the streets, and they were fighting the police, and they were making the system know that they weren't going to stand for social degeneracy in their country.
I think people are just need an excuse. They just need to see it being done by other people and to be given a chance to line up with that group. And also, I think it appeals to people as in the alternative. Young people want to be an alternative. They don't want to be a part of the establishment. And the left, the whole of the left is part of the establishment. You know, we saw this the other day with a demonstration in Dover, not from National Action, but a multi-group demonstration at Dover, and all the Antifa that were there had been organised by Diane Abbott. It's like your demonstration at Liverpool, that the left and the alternative, the counter demonstration, had been organised by the mayor of the city. So these people that think that they're an alternative, they're not the alternative. They're part of the establishment, and I think the young people, more than anyone else, can see that. And as you say, these older, more established groups, they're missing a trick, really, because these young people are the people that you need to appeal to. Because, like you say, it just needs to ignite, and you'd have all of them behind you. And there were large nationalist youth movements. We've had them in the past, in the 70s. And I really do think that we are due for another one, especially with groups like yourselves. And you've had a bit of influence from other groups on the continent. Is that right? Nordfront? Have you had you've had an exchange with them? Or I believe Ben's been over to see them. Are there any other groups that you've worked with at all that have influenced you?
Yeah, we have a very close working relationship with several groups on the continent. I know definitely Nordfront, the Nordic Resistance Movement. I know organizations in the Baltic states where our representatives have gone out and they've met with representatives of the Baltic nationalist parties. I know that we've had people go to Poland, for instance. I know that we're in contact with kind of the expatriate divisions of like the National Revival of Poland, groups like that. The good thing about the kind of the way that we view things is that we're not a kind of narrow, jingoistic British nationalist organization. We do understand that the struggle that we're in isn't a struggle just for like our British nation and, you know, the walks begin at Calais. We kind of understand that, look, you know, we're involved in a global struggle here. The forces that wish to destroy the white people in Britain want to destroy people, the white people across the globe, you know. And in order to combat this, we as white people need to join together. And as a race, we need to, you know, fight these people, and we need to reclaim control of our destiny. So what we kind of do is we have a good level of collaboration with these groups, and it's mostly on a creative level. So, for instance, as you mentioned before, our graphic designer Ben Raymond does a lot of collaboration with people in the Finnish resistance movement. We also kind of plan to kind of continue going out to places in Europe. So I think some of us might go to Germany on the 1st of May to support the anti-capitalist collective and the German nationalists, the Strasserites, annual demonstration in May. I think that there'll also be people going out to Vilnius to support the is it Latvia's Independence Day?
I think there's a Lithuanian Independence Day. Latvia have their Legionaries Day. I think it's really good to show this solidarity between the European nationalists. And as you say, you don't want to be jingoistic, and we need to move beyond this just strictly British nationalism or strictly German nationalism. It's our race that is at threat. It's the whole white race that is at threat. And if we can go and support these other nations when they are having their demonstrations, then we should, I think. It just swells the numbers, and it gives legitimacy to these other nationalist groups, because then they don't look like they're anti the rest of Europe. They don't look small-minded, because they've got other nationalists there that have gone there to join in. So, you know, I'm all for this, and I've always been impressed with National Action, where you do that. And the other side of that, I think, is the way you say Britain is ours and the rest must go. Because I think that's a fantastic statement there. It doesn't use any racial language. You can't possibly argue with that, can you? And that goes for all the other nations throughout Europe as well. They belong to them, and anyone who is not from them must go. Who's mainly responsible for the artwork then, and that you put out in the propaganda, Alex? Is that Ben responsible for that?
Yeah, and initially a lot of it did fall on Ben's shoulders. Producing all of the graphics and the designs did fall on him. Fortunately, we're in a position now where more and more people are getting involved, and we've got a solid group of designers now who are really, really good. So you might have seen the Spirit of 33 poster. I'm not sure if you saw that. But it's like an adaptation of an old NSDAP poster, but kind of modernized. There was the t-shirts that we produced. They were designed by another guy who runs his own graphics kind of page on Facebook called Vey Victus. So if you want to look that up, they should. Some really, really good designs. He's the same guy who does a lot of the stuff for the Smash Cultural Marxism page on Facebook.
I know the one, yeah.
But we've also got several other people kind of coming up. I know in the Southwest we've got a blog, and we've got a few designs on there, and a few kind of photographs on there that have been edited by somebody else. And it's all kind of coming together now, so we're kind of creating a kind of synergy, so things aren't just kind of put on one person's shoulders. There's now more of a division of labor, and more creative people are becoming involved. So for instance, in February now, we're going to be starting the filming for our documentary, which will be like an insight into our movement, the personalities involved, and what we're about. And that should be filmed over the kind of next sort of 12 months, and should be released hopefully towards the end of the year, but at worst in sort of early 2017. But that should be it'll be a very large project, but it'll be a very good insight into how we operate and how we've kind of grown. But that'll be a collaborative work between several individuals, at least probably even maybe a dozen individuals, you know, will probably have a significant input into that project.
Another good point to all of this is that you're quite picky over the people that you actually allow into the group. I know there's an age limit. I'll just say now, because some people have said, "Oh, National Action didn't get back to us or whatever." But I know that they've been over 30, and I know that you have an age limit to the group. Would you just want to let people know what the age limit is, so they don't get upset when they write to you and don't you don't accept them?
Yeah, the age limit isn't really fixed. I mean, we kind of cap it at about 35. But generally, if somebody comes to us and they've got some unique skills, so say, I don't know, you used to be in the military and you have good survivalist skills or first aid skills, Sure, you know, we're not gonna kind of say, oh well, because you know you're 35, you know, you're over the age of 35, we're not gonna let you in. But at the same time, you know, the reason for the age limit is because we're a youth group and we've got a specific demographic that we're gonna target. And one of the things that we find is that when you're on the street and you want to engage with young people, it's better to have them being engaged by other young people because they can relate to them better. It's like, I'm in sales, right? So, I know that, from my own sales experience, that it's much easier for somebody who's 21 to go over to 21-year-olds and talk to them and sign them up to like a charity, or to a cause than it is for a 40-year-old. But then vice versa, I know that it's easier for a 40-year-old to go to other 40-year-olds and sign them up to the same cause. Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah. We have it for that sort of reason. There is a security reason as well, and a kind of a group cohesiveness reason, which is basically the idea is that if you had an organization that is trying to strongly engage with young people, what we found is there's like a generational difference between older nationalists and how they believe that they should appeal to young people and how younger nationalists think that we should appeal to younger people. So if you look at the best probably example is like, if you look at, unfortunately, the National Front still persist in using images like the bulldog in their propaganda to appeal to young people, when that is kind of something that is taken from out the 70s somewhere and really doesn't resonate with anyone. Whereas at the same time, we want to use certain images that older people might find as being uncomfortable with or maybe slightly degenerate. So for instance, like we wouldn't mind using kind of pictures of like, you know, females or something, you know, to kind of advertise the group, whereas maybe an older, more somebody with a more conservative disposition might be like, oh, I don't know about that, we're all meant to be about family values. But you know, when you're 20 and you haven't really got a family and you're when you're a bachelor, you're kind of not too, you know, family values kind of aren't your top priority, you know.
So targeting a specific group, you've got to target your propaganda at the specific group. I can understand what you're saying there, Alex. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
And also there's a slight security reason there as well, because if you think about it, MI5 do not recruit teenagers. So you know that when you're speaking to a teenager, the likelihood of them being in any way kind of like an infiltrator for like state or something is minimized, whereas the older you get, the more likely, you know, there is that they could be some sort of state infiltrator or whatever. Though that does sound slightly conspiratorial, doesn't it?
No, I think it's a good point. I think you've got a good point there. And if you're getting the very best of the young people, then it's not going to be a problem. You know that it's going to be very hard for them to infiltrate you. Plus, you're going to be getting the very best of the young people who are going to be on the cutting edge of things. I think this is why your propaganda has appealed so much to people, is because it's come from young minds. As you say, it's not relying on images which are going to appeal to older people, but images which are going to appeal to younger people because they come from young minds. And not daft images from daft young people, but from the very best of our young people that are concerned about the damage that's being done to our country. I think one of the examples of the quality of the people that you've got coming to National Action was that band. I think they call themselves the Wolves and Angels. Is that right? The member was called Ghost. What's happening with him, with that band? Are they still going?
Well, the thing is, Wolves and Angels was a one-man project. So we had a guy contact us from the Northeast who was studying for a music degree. And once he kind of graduated, he had a bit of free time on his hands. So he basically put together this EP for us. And he did it completely off his own back. He used his own instruments and everything, his own recording equipment, and he put it together. And you know, it was a very good kind of, the thing is, it was a very good track, and it was a very good kind of, it was almost kind of something new, because a lot of British nationalists music is just like the same old kind of Oi and punk inspired music from the early 80s. It hasn't really progressed since then into other genres. So you don't have like a British nationalist alternative rock band. You don't have a British nationalist rap artist. You don't have a British nationalist and you know, any other kind of genres really, you know, emo or anything like that. But it was really good to have this guy. But thing is, what's happened now is that he's kind of gone, and he was part of a band anyway, and that band's kind of gone on to do quite well. So he's actually kind of a bit busy touring with his own band. And so the Of Wolves and Angels kind of project has been kind of sidelined a bit.
That's a shame, because sure, it's fantastic, you know, music. Really, really accomplished. You know, to think that it's just one person that made all that. Everyone that I know that's heard that has gone, that's really, really good. We use it we use it at Radio Aryan. We use it for the theme tune that we play at the beginning of these Aryan Insights interviews. I think it's a really accomplished musician, and that's you know, that's the sort of, if that's the general standard of the people that you've got, then you know you're going to succeed. If you've got a lot of people of that standard, then you know you're really going to go somewhere, and you're going to achieve exactly, you know, what you set out to achieve. It's a shame that he's not making more, but at least he's doing something successful if he's going off in his other band.
Yeah, look, the way I feel about it is like, look, you know, you're always, when you have people involved who are of that sort of caliber, so people who are going to good universities, people who have natural talents in things like sport and music, you know, art or whatever, you're going to find that some of these people are going to have to make a real choice of conscience between whether or not they go into politics, and they sacrifice all of their career prospects, and they put all of that kind of financial stuff second, and they put the cause first. And other people are going to have the choice of, you know, doing the opposite. And some people are going to choose the cause first, and other people are going to choose the financial side first and the career side first. And I don't really blame people for choosing the career side first. I know the guy of like Wolves and Angels is like a really good guy, and I'm confident that, you know, I wouldn't say that he's never going to produce any more Wolves and Angels music. I think, you know, fast forward a year or two, you know, watch out, we'll probably see another EP released, because, you know, I think he'll want to, you know, in a year or two's time, when his band's a bit more established and he's a bit more established, he'll probably maybe have a bit of spare time, and you know, he'll release another few tracks. But you know, until then, he's got his own stuff to work on. But you know, I don't blame people for that. You know, I can see where they're coming from. But obviously, it'd be nice if more people, you know, put the cause first. You know, but not everyone's going to do that, and that's just being realistic, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose at least he did that for you. You know, I think that's the way you're thinking. At least he did that for you. You should be really thankful for, because that's reached a lot of people. And as I say,
exactly. he didn't need to do that, did he?
No, yeah, no. No, that's the impression I get. It was quite a surprise to you. He'd been inspired by National Action and inspired by joining the group, and produced that as his contribution to the group.
Exactly. And all you need now is for like one other guy to hear that who's of the same caliber or could even be better. And he goes and does something else, and you know, he inspires another person, and that person inspires another person. It's a, you know, it's a rolling effect, you know, somewhere. So like, I think it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, you know.
And it's like showing by example. Instead of criticising and saying, well, people should be doing this or people should be doing that, you get out and do it yourself and show them what you mean and inspire them.
And is it saying, propaganda of the deed.
Yeah, propaganda of the deed. I want to go into maybe your conference that you had last year. I became aware of that with the YouTube of it, and that was pretty accomplished. Again, the standard of the speakers that you had there was of a very high quality for a group that's just started, for a group that's mainly the members are under 35, a lot of members from universities sort of ages. That was a really accomplished conference. I've listened to that a couple of times. Did you have any other speakers that you didn't include in the video?
We excluded both of the speakers who were over 35. So we didn't. I don't think we recorded Max Masson's speech, and I don't think we included Jez Turner's speech. But I think Max Masson, he published a transcript of his speech on the Western Spring website. So everyone's probably read that as an article on the Western Spring website. Jez Turner, he gave, I think, a similar version of the speech he gave at our conference at the anti-Shomrim demonstration.
Oh, yes, I know.
So I think they were released on our YouTube page. Those speeches have been released in one form or another. But the speeches that we released were all speeches of NA members and supporters who were involved in the organization in a kind of more heavier sort of way, whereas Max and Jez are just kind of people who kind of support our efforts.
Well, I think it was good that it was a conference of National Action for National Action. It wasn't a conference that was there to make money from people or just have a few speeches and a dinner. It was all people that were committed to the cause, talking to each other and putting out what you wanted to put out online. So I'm sure that you must have had interest from people that saw that conference that were then interested in the group as well and wanted to become a part of it and to help you and work with you to achieve what you're trying to achieve. Can you give a rough idea of sort of what sort of size the group is now or how quickly it's expanded? I don't want you to give too much away that you don't want to, but is it possible to give us a rough idea at all?
Yeah, we're growing quite nicely. Obviously, you kind of have a rate of attrition, you know. And what you find is that sometimes you can have a flurry of inquiries in, so you can release what you find is like the number of inquiries you get is like a correlation between how many activities you do, how many videos you put up and articles you put up on the website. But you do find that sometimes you might get 20 inquiries and for some reason or another, you'll only end up passing 5 or 6 of them over to regional organizers and only 2 of them might actually join the organization. Whereas another time you can have 10 people contact you and 9 of those can end up joining the organization. So it's very difficult to predict, but we check the email every day, and pretty much every day we're getting new people emailing in. All I can say is people need to stop being pussies and need to get involved more, because every time you put out a video we get hundreds of likes, hundreds of comments, thousands of views. I know how many hits the website gets, and that's many thousands. We just need those thousands of people who are looking at our material and support what we do to actually send in emails and get in touch with us and get involved in their local group. And if there isn't a local group in their area, we need those people to start a local group in their area, because if you as a National Socialist aren't going to make the first step, no National Action is going to come into your area and slay the Jewish dragon. You're going to have to come and do it, That's all I can say about that.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking, Harold Covington, he often says if he could just have 500 men of good character, that he could take the whole of the Northwest for the Northwest Republic. And you seem to be concentrating on character. It's only people of the highest character and highest caliber that you're accepting into the group. So, I think we are going to see some amazing things from National Action over the next few years because of that, because you do have that concentration on character rather than lots of numbers, quality rather than quantity, as it were, which is what you really want. When you think about IQ, one man with an IQ of 130 is going to be 1,000 Negroes with an IQ of 70. It's not stackable. A character, a willpower and IQ is not stackable. Just one genius can achieve more than a whole nation of sub-geniuses. So you're just, and this is what National Socialism was about getting the best people and encouraging them and bringing out the best from within them, which is this what I see happening with National Action. Because you don't have any particular leader, do you, from what I hear? You have organisers and people that run the websites and yourself, Alex, but people are expected to take their own initiatives. Is that correct? Could you explain a little bit about that, about the way you structure things in that way, the leaderless resistance, as it were?
Well, a smart man keeps his cards close to his chest, so I'm not going to pass too much comment on that, but all I'm going to say is, if you want to know how National Action's run, you've got to get involved, son. You got to be part of it. Part of the white gang.
Well, people definitely need to get in touch with you. How can they get in touch with you? Just through the website, National Action Info?
Yeah, there's an email, contact@nationalaction.info. And also, if you go onto the website, there's a tab there that says regions, and there's a list of banners there for our active regions. Click on those. There should be some contact details there. So some of them link to a blog, others link to other things. The South Wales one doesn't link to anyone, but if you use the links there, you can contact your local branch as well. So if you're in the Midlands or Scotland or London, you can do that. But generally, if you're not, if you're having problems, or if you want to get straight to your local contact, go for the main email.
Okay, and just there's been some criticism. I'm trying to think of. I don't think you can really criticise the group at all. But there has been some small criticism of your support for people in the Ukraine. Would you want to address that at all?
Sure. Our stance in the Ukraine is that basically you've got people there, right, who are nationalists, and that's indisputable. You can't look at groups like the Social National Union and think, oh, well, they must be Jews. Because obviously they're not, because they fought the Jewish state in Ukraine for years. They were oppressed by the state for a long, long time. And they've stuck to their ideals, and they've made the sacrifice for being National Socialists. And they've overturned the state there. I think, our stance is basically that we support the Nationalists there, and we have faith in the Nationalists to do the right thing. And what I find so sickening is that you have these keyboard warriors who haven't achieved anything, who are just kind of on the sidelines there and completely insignificant, sniping at these nationalists who've done so much, who risked so much, who overturned a tyrannical state and are now fighting in groups like the Azov Battalion to defend Ukrainian sovereignty. And all they can do is sneer and go, ooh, but, Putin is some savior of the white race when he's imprisoning nationalists and banning Holocaust denial, and flooding Moscow with Muslim immigrants. So it's a complicated, I'm not saying it's not a complicated situation, and I'm not saying that that we should have, whites fighting whites. I'm not saying that the Ukrainian nationalists are perfect, but what I am saying is have a little bit of faith.
I think nationalists should support nationalists. It's not the nationalists that are running the government. That's what I think they need to be doing, is getting rid of the Poroshenko and Klitschko, yeah, and Timoshenko, who they're the Jews, and they're the ones that are still in the government. And the nationalists should be encouraged to go after them, I think, and try and come to some peaceful arrangement with Russia. Obviously, Putin has done some negative things, and he is responsible for a lot of subversion in the Baltic states. So I think in the West, we don't tend to see that much. And in America, we don't tend to see that much. We just see what Obama does, and we see what Cameron does, and we compare them to Putin.
The problem is, though, I mean, you say we should encourage the Ukrainian nationalists, but we can't encourage the Ukrainian nationalists because we don't have any leverage over the Ukrainian nationalists. So it's a little bit like completely academic talking about this, really, because it's something that it's a situation that we can't impact on at all. All we can do is give them our moral support. That's literally all we can do. I think that's something we should do because, you know, a lot of these people have kind of sacrificed. And if we had activists in this country, if we had a movement in this country that was willing to sacrifice like the Ukrainian nationalists were, then we would be in a much better situation. We'd be a lot closer to saving our own country. So I think people in our movement who criticize the Ukrainians, like, it's kind of like a bit like, you know, the pot calling the kettle black. You know, it's we shouldn't, you know, don't throw those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, you know. Because at least they've had some sort of national revolution. I think one interesting thing is that when who's the Jewish woman called who was released from prison?
Timoshenko.
After she was released, Pravi sector, put up a poster with her face on it saying, you know, heroes didn't die for this, you know? So it's not as if these nationalists are completely stupid. In fact, they're very kind of coy to what's going on. But, you know, the situation there is complicated and, you know, it's very difficult for us to actually make a reasoned and objective analysis of the situation there. We've got to put a little bit of trust in these Ukrainians because, you know, they got themselves much further than we've ever gotten ourselves. They have a lot more power in Ukraine than we have in Britain. So, you know, I think we should, give credit where it's due.
Oh, I think you've got a good point there, about not having much influence, but they can see what's put out there on the website. So the ones that can speak English can. They can read what's on the websites and what's on the blogs. So I think the criticism should really be directed at the Jews in power and supporting the nationalists there to get rid of those Jews in power. I think, as I say, the confusion comes in with Russia. As I say, we compare them to our own, and the grass is always greener. It always is greener. And I dare say they can look at Britain and say, well, look, you've got this, that and the other. And we haven't got this where we've been under Russia for the last, you know, however many years.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. I can imagine if I was a Ukraine, it's very difficult to kind of conceptualize what it's like, what, you know, Ukrainian and Russian relations must be like, because, you know, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of bad blood there, you know, the Holodomor and that sort of thing, which is something that we can't conceptualize. Like, you know, I'm Welsh, right? And, you know, people, Welsh nationalists like to complain about how bad the English are, you know, but the English, you know, what the Russians did, well, I say the Russians, what the Jewish Bolsheviks did to, the Ukrainians make anything the English have ever done to the Welsh, you know, seem very, very small fry, you know, pales in significance, you know. It's different. It's a very difficult situation.
I think the way the English and the Welsh have come together over the last few centuries should really give hope for all white nations, really. The English and the Welsh get on quite well. Well, they seem to nowadays. British.
Yeah, know. I mean, it's mostly, the animosity just seems to consist of a bit of rivalry around rugby, which is...
But we're all facing the same enemy now, aren't we?
Games.
It's the thing, we've all got the same enemy. All the white nations have got the same enemy at the moment. We've got Jews that have infiltrated our nations. They've turned our own people against us, and they're importing these savage hordes from the third world to replace us. So we're all facing the same enemy. So we do need to support each other, and as you were saying, with going to other countries to support them, like National Action are doing, and supporting even the groups that we may not really agree with their politics, like the Ukrainian nationalists, but support them because they are nationalists. It's like just Turner gave a speech and he said a nationalist is a nationalist for all nationalists, and you support all nationalists. And yeah, I think that's the right way to be. And clearly, that's the way National Action think. Okay, Alex, I don't know if you just want to add anything here at the end of the interview, if you want to let the listeners know anything before we sign off.
No, I think we've covered everything, really. All I can just say is, you know, appeal to people, get active in your local nationalist organization. You know, revolutions aren't made by people far away, they're made by you, and you doing something, getting off your ass and sticking it to the enemy. You know, there aren't many nationalists out there active at the moment, you know, but there are plenty of people on the internet, and those people on the internet need to realize that if only a tenth of you got active and started, you know, turning out on the streets, turning out to demonstrations, we turn things around very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think things will turn around. Okay, Alex Davies, thank you very much for being on Aryan Insights. Wake up!